Welcome to Tax Chats.
Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Tax Chats. I'm Scott Dyring, professor of accounting at Duke University, and I am joined, as always, by my friend and colleague, the Tax Museum curator and the director of research at the UNC Tax Center, Jeffrey Lamoureux Hoops. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
What's going on over in the Tax Museum today?
Not a whole lot. We did have a visitor this morning. We had a tourist this morning.
Really?
Good hour-long visit.
No way. Wow. Yeah. It's definitely noteworthy.
Quite noteworthy.
And has there been any research going on over there at the Tax Center?
Every day. We're researching along.
Okay. Well, what are we going to talk about today on Tax Chats?
Well, I think, you know, often we talk about taxes at the international level, taxes at the, you know, country level. Sometimes we talk about state taxes. We had an episode once about property taxes here in the county that we live in. But I thought today we should talk about taxes at an even more localized level.
Okay.
Okay. I want to talk about taxes in my home.
You mean like the kind that you and your wife pay?
No. Oh. I mean the type that me and my wife impose. We have a system of taxes in the Hoops family home, or at least at times and in seasons have had systems of taxes. And I want to talk about those.
Why does this not surprise me?
Well, I don't know.
So you're like the government and your children are like the...
My wife and I are the kings and queens of the Hoops family.
Okay.
And sometimes we impose taxes on our subjects.
Are those taxes grievous to be borne?
Not too much. Okay, so here's the situation. I'm going to explain a situation, and then I'm going to ask you a series of questions about it.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
One problem that we had many years ago, this is probably 14 years ago at this point, we had two children. The first was very, very small, and the first child was maybe then like 3 years old, 2 years old, 4 years old, something like that, and we made the mistake of deciding he didn't need to be in a crib anymore.
Wait, we got to back up just a little bit. We got to back up. You have five children.
Right now, yep. This is a long time ago.
This was when you had, these were your first two.
First two, yep.
Okay, so you took the three-year-old out of the crib.
Yeah, what happens when you let the kid out of the crib?
Well, the biggest problem I've had with my children is once we let them out of the crib, they don't stay in bed. So it makes it hard for them to, like, they don't stay asleep all night. They just want to keep getting out and playing with the older people, basically.
And where do they go?
Well, my kids would go to like the TV or to our room, which was even worse.
They come to
like,
your room and they wake you up. They go play. They fall asleep places. And when they're not potty trained, they go to the bathroom in those places because they fall asleep. We had to throw away a recliner because our kid fell asleep on it a couple times and laid on it and went to the bathroom on it. And it turns out when I took it outside and just hosed it off, you can't hose off a bigger recliner and get it to dry out no matter how hard you try. So we had these problems, right?
Hang on just a minute. I thought that the whole reason you take the kid out of the crib was because once they're potty trained, if they need to go during the night, they have to be able to get out.
That could be a reason, but it could also be a reason that you have two kids and only have one crib.
Or I just think
it's time for the kid to get out of the crib. Whatever reason, we let him out. Probably a mistake, but we let him out of the crib. Okay, so the problem was not staying in bed.
Okay, that is a problem.
So
I'm currently fighting that problem with my youngest, by the way, 3.5 years old.
Okay, maybe this will be useful information for you. So what, like, if you're the governor of your home, what rules or incentives or what solutions could you come up with? Start with not tax.
Okay, well, the incentive that I currently have offered to my 3.5-year-old, the baby, is that if she can stay in her room all night in the bed without coming to my room during the night, that if she does that five nights in a row, she gets a Disney princess crown from Target.
Like, then she just has a big stack of crowns, or it doesn't ever happen?
No, she it's never happened, so she doesn't have the crown yet. We haven't gone five days in a row. And she really wants the crown, so we said, well, you can have it if you go five nights in a row in your own bed.
Now, I said non-tax.
That's a subsidy, I guess, kind of.
You're providing an incentive for you. The government is giving something to one of its subjects.
True, but I'm not taking
as a result
anything.
Of behavior. No, but we got all sorts of tax incentives where if you do a thing, we give you money.
True.
And if it's refundable, it doesn't even require you have paid any taxes, right?
True. Okay, so I guess this is a refundable tax credit.
Let's start with non-tax things. Anything like what could one do?
Well, I definitely talked to her about it. Hey, don't you think it'd be great how soft your bed is? Stay in your bed. How wonderful that is. I mean, that's pretty much
not working at all. No.
Doesn't work. Okay,
so here's some things you could think about and like how would they create.
By the way,
rule.
I did tell her to go across the hall to her older sister's room, which she does, and then she just tells the older sister to help her come down to our room in the middle of the night. So that's not worked out so well. So
like you could put her back in the you could like create some kind of barrier, you could create some kind of rule that says if you get out, you'd be punished in some way. And we do that in government, right? We have We
jail.
Have things that we don't like. We have jail for corporations, just like impose fines. We have, you know, for example, if we want to stop pollution, I think pollution is a good analogy. Pollution's a bad behavior. We want to stop it. We could just like create EPA rules. And if you violate this rule, you pay some fine.
But isn't that the same as a tax?
I'd say it's a little different.
Is that as different
as... And what is it and what a tax is? That's something we talk about for a long time, but is EPA... Is a fine by the EPA a tax with the base being
bad
some,
behavior?
It's a behavior, but it's not a. I don't think it's a tax.
Some might
I don't
call
feel
it
like
a Pigouvian
tax,
but maybe loosely.
Okay, so you could do something non-tax. So what we started out doing is actually exactly like you did, but with a much simpler accounting system. So your system requires you to be able to count to five.
Yeah, it's because I have very smart children.
Yeah. So we would give a quarter to the child if they'd stay in bed. And judging by the price of Disney princesses and inflation adjusting, we're probably cheaper than you because we're much poorer and still are much poorer than you, of course.
This is the private school salary working its way into my child rearing behavior.
Yeah. A quarter. We give them a quarter. And that we did that for a few nights. And then it dawned on me, why am I giving my child a quarter for something he should be doing already? That's ridiculous. That's not the way life should work.
So in other words, we shouldn't be rewarding behavior that's expected. We should be rewarding extraordinary behavior.
Yep. And then what should we do with behavior that's deviant?
Well, I mean, I would say put them in jail, but you can't really do that to your kids. So,
they just got out of jail. The crib was jail. Now they're out of jail.
I see.
And so what we did is we imposed, and we did call it this, and it was a system in place for several years. We had the floor tax.
The floor tax.
So instead of giving them a quarter, they had to give me a quarter. If after they'd gone to bed, they got out before they went to sleep. And if they needed to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom or had some emergency, they could do that, which happened rarely, but they had to go to sleep first.
Okay.
The floor tax. Literally, if your foot touched the floor.
Where did they get money to pay this tax? Did you endow them with some amount of money?
They had small amounts of money, and it turned out it didn't matter. I think we might have had like two remittances of the floor tax. In the 2-year time period.
Was compliance high tax, or was it just that they
really didn't want to have to pay the quarter.
Okay. So I need to change my system.
Part of what they had is they had built up some quarters from when we had subsidized good behavior.
Yes, okay.
When we gave them this incentive.
I see.
And so then what I did is just left one of those quarters on their bed, unlike the bed frame. So if you get out, taking the quarter away.
Were they ever tempted to grab the quarter and hide it somewhere so that you couldn't?
I'd find it. I can find a quarter.
And this worked. It solved your problem.
Yeah, we solved the problem, actually. And it was quite successful. And for the first long time, we had that in place. And actually, we basically didn't have the problem after that. The kids
did
stayed
you
in bed.
Continue this system with your remaining children?
I think only the first two or three were subject to the floor tax. The fourth was not subject to the floor tax, didn't really have a problem. The fifth has never been subject to the floor tax, but also is pretty stays in his bed pretty well.
Okay.
So I want to analogize that to the tax we have and going back to pollution.
Is analogize a word?
Of course it is.
Okay.
I mean, I know you're at Duke, so you don't know all the dictionary.
Oh, but yeah, I did grow up on a farm, and I did get out of the spelling bee on the word walnut. So I wouldn't say that's my strength right
Is
there.
That just because they pronounced it as they would pronounce it in Manti, Utah, so you spelled
walnut.
It as they would
spell walnut. It's a walnut. Compound word, clearly.
Walnut. Okay, so what would be, so let's say we talked about pollution as a problem. What would be two ways you could solve the pollution problem with taxes?
Well, one way, which is being tried right now, is to provide...
Not pollution. Let's say it's kind of a pollution of global warming. We've got too much carbon.
So one way that's being attempted right now is with the Inflation Reduction Act. We're basically paying companies through the use of tax credits to produce green energy. So to do the good thing. We're paying them to do the good thing.
Yeah, and in all sorts of different ways to produce either directly or... Because we think having more electric vehicles or solar panels or batteries or whatever, all these different things that are tied to producing less carbon, we're paying them for doing the good thing.
We're giving them a Disney princess crown.
We're giving them a Disney princess crown if you're from a fancy private school, or a quarter if you're a PhD student at the University
of Michigan.
Doesn't
a Disney princess crown sound so much more appealing if you're a 3.5-year-old girl? I don't know. Maybe not.
I don't know. I've never been one.
True, you have not.
So what would be the alternative?
The alternative, I think, would be to do something like a carbon tax, where when someone creates or emits a ton of carbon, the government fines them or forces them to pay some amount.
Not fine. It's a tax on the
space. Well, I realize it's not a fine. It's a tax, but like, it's a penalty for emitting carbon, basically.
Yeah, so for every ton of carbon, you pay some amount in tax. And there could be some floor below which you don't have to pay. It could be all sorts of complications. But basically, the more carbon you permit or emit, the more taxes you pay.
Yeah.
One thing, there's a whole bunch of different things that I think about. The kind of most important here in comparing these two is that one of these allows you to emit less in carbon by any way necessary. Like, you can do anything you want to emit less carbon, and as long as you emit less carbon, the carbon tax charges you less. Whereas right now, with the Inflation Reduction Act, for example, all of these different things that we have that have the ultimate goal of emitting less carbon, none of them actually directly gives you some benefit for emitting less carbon. There is actually methane. There's a small price per unit methane that you emit for in some situation in the IRA. But most of them are just the government thinking of all the different ways in which you might emit less carbon and then giving a subsidy to each of those ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a big difference.
So, yeah, it is a big difference because it sort of doesn't give you the opportunity to come up with the clever, innovative way to not pay the tax. You just have to do it the way the government wants,
that's exactly right. So you're bound within the confines of what Congress able to imagine was the solutions Congress was able to imagine when they considered this problem, as opposed to the own creativity you might have when you realize how much money there would be to be saved if you face a carbon tax.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And I think for an earth-shattering problem, like a big problem that we don't have a good solution to, it's something really important to realize. Like, the big solution that we don't currently have currently has no tax benefit because we haven't thought of it. Yeah. But if we had a carbon tax, it would have a huge tax benefit and there would be huge economic incentives to try to come up with it.
Yep. Yeah, that's a really interesting way to think about it. So the government has adopted the Dyring technique, but the Jeff Hoops technique might actually be more conducive to innovative activity along the dimension of the problem.
Way more conducive to innovative activities that we currently don't understand or know about, because there's no incentive to create new things. It's just there's more incentive to do more of the old things that we already had.
My poor child has now lost an opportunity to be innovative. I think we may have to change the incentive at the Dyring household so that we can work on her creative abilities.
Could be.
Yeah. Okay. Although the floor tax, I mean, she's kind of landlocked, so it'd be, she'd have to like basically invent a flying machine to get out of her house.
Well, the analogy doesn't go perfectly well. There's not like other ways to.
Maybe if Children Forever had been, had the tax, floor tax imposed, something like a hoverboard would be invented very quickly.
Could be.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. what is that, the only tax that the Hoops household
we've had
imposes?
Another tax. Are you ready for the other tax?
I can't wait.
This
I
might
mean
be
so
too
far
scandalous.
Your taxing genius has proven to far exceed mine, so I'm excited.
This one might be too salacious for Tax Chats listeners, but we'll try it out.
Uh-oh.
We had a big problem in the Hoops family.
Okay.
Of not flushing the toilet.
Okay. Common problem when one has children around the house.
And riding on the successful tailcoats of the floor tax, we decided to implement what we called the toilet tax.
You call it the toilet tax?
The toilet tax.
Okay.
And it was a $1. This is four times the price of the floor tax. $1 charge, because it was a little older kids now that were doing this.
Okay.
If you didn't flush the toilet.
And this is interesting, because how does one verify if one doesn't
that's exactly
flush
right.
the
so
toilet?
Unlike the floor tax, which was very easy to administer, very easy to enforce, because if you see the child outside of their bed, then you know they violated it. And three-year-old children are not very good at not being observed out of bed.
Yeah, exactly.
The toilet tax faced administrative challenges.
It gets discovered potentially quite a long time after the misdeed has been performed.
Yes. And so a few instances that we needed to enforce the toilet tax, we would just ask, and some child would confess, and they would pay.
Okay.
But the whole floor tax regime came down in shambles.
Okay.
When everybody denied.
Ah.
Having not flushed the toilet.
So there was a, so you went around the whole family, you said, who didn't flush? And everybody said, it wasn't me, wasn't me, wasn't me, wasn't me.
Correct.
And, but somebody clearly, because it clearly wasn't like the neighbor.
Correct.
Yeah.
It wasn't the neighbor. It could have been that somebody just like didn't remember or forget. You know, you're dealing with little kids. They could just forget, but they could have been lying.
Okay.
Okay.
So how does one enforce if,
How does one enforce?
If you can't figure out who the culprit is. One possibility would be to tax everyone.
We could tax everyone, but that would violate the norms of equity and fairness.
Yes, it would. Okay. Yeah.
And so because of the inadministrability of the toilet tax.
By the way, one of we should remind listeners that one of Adam Smith's maxims is that a tax should be sort of administrable, right? It means to be, I can't remember exactly.
It has to be able to administer it. And there's a lot of taxes. I mean, so for example, right now, within the last few weeks, there was a tax suggested, proposed, Bonnegraw and Wyden of Oregon, that we've talked about a prior version of this tax on Tax Chats before, would be taxing unrealized capital gains.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have talked about a wealth tax as well. And one big challenge to taxes on unrealized gains, especially for some assets, might not necessarily apply to this most recent Wyden version, is if you can't actually know the value of the increase in appreciation, if you don't know the amount that you have to tax, it's quite hard to administer it. So some taxes like are great if everybody voluntarily complied. Well, actually, the toilet tax is a good example. It's great if everybody voluntarily complied.
Yep.
And two things can mess that up. One, it can be people obviously don't want to voluntarily comply and going to try everywhere to get out of it.
I mean, of course you're going to deny that you were the one that violated the laws of the bathroom.
Correct. But then the second, which might have happened in the toilet tax, it could have been that all of my children were completely honest in asserting that they had not violated the law and they just forgot because they were 4 years old. I mean, some of these taxes, like we assume if the everybody was just honest, it would work perfectly fine. But in the end, like you don't know what the increase in the value of your asset is. It's not that people are necessarily going to be lying about it or trying to hide things. It's you own a private company. You've owned it for 30 years. And from year 30 to 31, you don't know how much value it's increased. You don't know how much to pay in some version of a wealth tax.
Or it reminds me of the infamous court case with the stuffed eagle.
The stuffed eagle. There's just weird things that happen where you don't know the value. It's not that you're trying to be dishonest. You just don't know. Just like the poor little kid didn't know they forgot to flush the toilet in my house and lied and could have been lying about it.
Might have been lying, but might have just not remembered.
Might not remember. Yeah. So those are two taxes.
Okay. That have been so we got to be able to administer, but you haven't solved the problem for me yet. How are you going to administer this?
We gave up.
You gave up.
It's an intractable problem.
It was an intractable problem. So the toilet tax went the way of the world.
All gone. Don't have it anymore.
Okay. Well, has the problem resolved itself with age and maturity?
Age and maturity, I would say it's no more of a problem than the average toilet.
Okay. Now, an interesting, maybe we need to do this at the Fuqua School of Business, because every toilet that I'm aware of in the Fuqua School of Business has the auto
self-flushing.
The auto flushing, except one bathroom has a wall of manual flushers, okay? Mm-hmm. And they never get flushed, because I think everybody's in the habit of just walking away.
Manual flushing.
And so people go in there and they put like post-it notes, please flush, and like no one ever flushes. I think maybe instead of a reminder, we need a tax imposed on
maybe, or you should just stand back there and yell at people as they're walking away.
Maybe that would do it too. Well, okay. So interestingly enough, I did one time try to impose a tax because I was sick of my children like arguing over petty things. I'm sure your children probably never argue with each other's, but mine will argue over things like, you're breathing my air, your toe got on my cushion on the couch. There's three cushions and you get that cushion and I get this cushion. Your toe reached my cushion, you know, that kind of thing. And it's probably unfamiliar to you, I know. But in any case, I decided I would just impose a tax anytime somebody was being like I didn't name it. I probably should have, like the ticky-tack argument tax or something, like just the lame argument tax. And I started just creating a tally on the board. Every time they did something, I would just tally it up. And every tally was like a 10-cent tax. But I think my tax rate wasn't high enough because I didn't really see a behavioral change. And I eventually gave up.
And you should have done it instantly. So this is another lesson from tax administration. The more salient a tax is, independent of its level, the more it works, right? So we have studies where they impose a sales tax. Nobody knows about the sales tax. You pretend as if the sales tax doesn't exist. But if you remind people that the sales tax exists, like every time you buy something, they actually change your taxing behavior as a result of the salience, just like knowing it and observing it and seeing it. So you need to like go and make them actually hand you that dime every time.
Yeah. Well, I probably would have worked better. So what I'm really just hoping for is that my children just age out of these problems, but I'm not sure that always happens. We'll see. So this actually has got me thinking about something, which I think we have talked about before, but I'm not sure people always think about often. When you go to elementary school, or you go to middle school, or you go to high school, or even in college, and we say, why do we have taxes? The most common answer is, oh, well, because we need to raise revenue so the government can use that money to provide public goods. Things like the military and roads and schools and whatever.
Yep.
And then if you press them a little bit more and you say, is that the only reason? Oh, well, no, there's other things like, we want to encourage or discourage behavior, or we want to redistribute wealth or whatever it happens to be. And what we are talking about here is kind of interesting. I don't think you were interested at all in raising the revenue from this tax. What you're interested in doing
revenue is was from the perspective of the government, the revenue is negligible.
Negligible, exactly. But and the behavioral change.
And we weren't interested at all in redistribution, another objective of tax codes. We were not interested in like redistributing income from the children to the parents. Likewise, it was all just about
behavioral change.
About behavioral change.
Yep. And what's fascinating to me about this from a real world perspective is sometimes we look at the tax code and we say, why is it so messed up? It is so complicated. It's so this, it's so that. And as many people know, like the tax code itself is like really, really thick and cumbersome. Why is it so thick and cumbersome? Because the purpose of the tax code is multifaceted. And that means that sometimes we introduce provisions or exceptions or preferences, however you want to think about them, to encourage certain types of behavior, whether they be investment in a certain type of a thing, or whatever it happens to be, or to discourage certain types of behavior. So like we have taxes on cigarettes or alcohol or whatever it might happen to be. And that makes the tax code more complicated. And it just an illustration of the fact that the tax system is designed to do more than simply raise revenue. It's fun to think about. All right. So anything else to tell us about the about King and Queen Hoops and their peasant children?
No, nothing at all.
All right. Very good. Well, it's always fun to chat, Jeff, and I appreciate learning about the tax system in your household. So maybe the Dierings need to adopt the floor tax for the three-year-old. See if we can solve the problem. We'll see. This has been another edition of Tax Chats. I'm Scott Diering, professor of accounting at Duke University, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend and colleague at the University of North Carolina, Jeff Hoops. We'll chat with you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.